Next year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
I'm one of HRN's interns, Nina Medvinskaya, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's topic? The marriage of food and danger. Sometimes, danger lurks in the food that we eat.
So instead of saying what is poisonous, I'd rather say what's not, because it's literally just the flesh and the fins.
Food poisoning doesn't just threaten our bodies, but it endangers our environment as well.
The emissions of JBS, combined with the other top five meat companies, exceed the annual emissions of Exxon, Shell, or BP.
For more, tune into this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
All right, good morning. This is Emily Pearson. Patrick decided to let me take this part today.
You're doing it all wrong.
Oh, I'm doing it all wrong. This is the Main Course OG. I'm here in studios this morning with Mike Edison, Brandon Hoy, Patrick Martins, the founder of Heritage Radio.
Which is turning 10 next year.
Which Happy is turning birthday. 10 in 2019.
Brandon is like 10. He didn't think we would go 10 days.
I didn't think we'd go 10 minutes, honestly.
He was like, yeah, we'll get two free shipping containers out of this deal. This idiot, he doesn't have any people to do a show. He does a five-hour show on Sundays
that was like no one edited, listens to. That was the edited language in which I used.
And lo and behold, there's heat here. There's air conditioning. You've stuck around a while.
But there's no light, obviously. Why are we sitting in the dark?
It's dark.
We have candles, and it's like we're getting romantic with Mike Edison.
Oh, first time for everything.
It's a little dim today. It's a little dim. We also have our guest for the weekly grill. We have Joe Tarasco. Good morning.
Yeah, baby.
Good morning,
yeah,
everybody.
Chef.
Happy to be in the dark hot room right now.
Oh, geez. Doesn't everybody want to be a guest on our show now?
Yes.
Joe is the Associate Director of Operations at Union Square Hospitality Group and oversees Marta, Vini e Fritti, and Cafe Marchio. Patrick, you want to give me a little rundown on what we're going over today?
Well, the weekly based is going to really be fantastic. We are going to talk about how we will be remembered this time in history, 50,000 years from now. We're going to talk about big trends, predictions for 2019, and I have some great ones. And I think you guys are going to be impressed. And then also we're going to talk top 10 lists. We're going to talk about fatness. And, you know, people's diet changing in the winter. And we thought we would talk about pizza, too. And then we're going to ask Joe some hard-hitting questions about delegation and about working with Danny Meyer and new projects. So it'll be a very interesting show, as usual.
As usual, of course. Well, everyone, thank you for being here. Thanks for getting your coffee and bacon, egg, and cheeses.
Cafe Coretto.
Yes. For sure. So first off,
at this point, I'm basically correcting my rum with coffee.
All right. Noted. I'll try it next week. The New York Times food section reported that the journal Royal Society Open Science said that, quote, our time on Earth will be marked by leftover chicken bones, and, quote, we live in the age of chickens, which was highlighted with a note that there are 23 billion chickens on Earth. So what do all these chicken bones say about us? And what else will our Earth say or show about us in, I was going to say 10,000 years. Patrick has now said 50.
Oh, 10,000. No, that's good.
I think that's incredibly optimistic that there'll be anything here but a cinder and a dying ember of what you call Earth in 10,000 years. So, yeah, cheers to that.
You're really
Jeep
depressing.
Still be around.
That was depressing.
But we could start sending all of our chicken bones to Mars. I think we have the technology to do that now. Or at least to the moon, right?
At least.
Well, all I think by then that chickens will be genetically modified to be all wings that secrete their own dipping sauce. And that one of them is going to go wild in a mall in like Utah and attack people or something like that. I mean, I think stuff's going to change like that.
Well, I think it's obvious that everyone's going to know we were way outnumbered by chickens. So that may be the cause of our demise.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how the zombie apocalypse starts, right? It's like a self-dipping wing chicken bites a human, and that's the beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end.
And I was going to give a more serious answer, if that's okay. I think avocado peels. I was walking yesterday, and you know those stupid little kiosks in the city that just sort of give facts and information and the weather, and people charge their phones at them, I think.
I didn't know those existed.
Oh, you don't leave Brooklyn, I guess. But in Manhattan, they have these funny kiosks. And this one said that from 2017 to 2018, avocado sales rose in New York 25%. So I don't know. Avocado toast, peels, do the nuts, do they all biodegrade?
Well, they'll be concentrated to certain hipstery like areas of Manhattan, I think. I don't know.
What nuts are we talking about?
The seed? I'm sorry.
The nuts. You know those damn pesky avocado nuts that are just floating around in people's pants.
All right, I've been misspeaking for a while. Avocado seeds? I'm sorry.
Well, this was an era of, you see, chicken bones are going to deteriorate. I mean, I see chicken bones deteriorate in Red Hook when there's like some big islands party or whatever, there's chicken bones strewn all over. They kind of disintegrate. But I will say this, that I think that they will be like the new, this is the era of like knives and kitchens and chefs becoming a major demographic in our country. And I think there people are going to see like knives and sous vide machines.
Oh yeah, the sous vide machines that are like so popular in you know, across China and India.
Yeah.
Where most of the world's population lives.
Anybody who wants
somebody's going to dig up the 500,000 jewel machines that exist.
Yes. All right.
I mean, you just made fun of my bougie avocado toast. This one's talking about, you know, that there won't be appliances.
I mean, that's postmodernism, right? That an avocado became trendy in 2018, something that's existed, you know, been part of culture for 3,000 years, and suddenly a couple of millennials figured they could spread it.
Wasn't there a shortage?
The funny thing was that actually avocado didn't become popular until like the 70s or late 70s or 80s.
Right. For Americans.
But, I mean, even kind of...
Name a green fruit that became popular in the 80s.
Kiwi?
Yes, good.
You should have had a buzzer. Who could?
I would like to make time capsules. I'm fascinated by the concept of making time capsules.
Food trends of the 80s for $300, Alex? What is Cajun? Where's your buzzer?
All right.
Thank you.
Let's talk about predictions. Right.
What is mezcal and salad?
Predictions for 2019. We've heard big trends will be CBD lattes, seaweed, the legalization of marijuana, bacon-wrapped grapes, and, of course, egg salad sandwiches. We think these will be the big trends
of 2019. Egg salad sandwiches.
We polled our office. Everyone was feeling really, like, nostalgic. They thought it was going to come back around.
So I would like to go first because you guys are going to blow your minds. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think 2019 is going to be huge for the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And
where's the buzz?
And for entertainment. I think entertainment is going to be huge. That's my prediction.
Those are bold.
Call me crazy.
Risky.
I'm going out on a limb. I think email is going to be big, but not that big. The internet, huge. Huge.
Silence. All right,
go.
Dead silence.
Yeah, really, Nostradamus. You go, Kat. Go.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that porn is going to be massive.
Oh, my God.
And pork. Porn and pork.
Together.
At last. Two great tastes that go great together.
I don't know. But Joe, come on, give me something better.
No, don't give me that Babe in the Woods shit, Emily. Well,
I can picture people spreading avocado on their toast, reading about Meghan Markle for at least the next year.
Clearly, he's been listening to our show. He knows we have a soft spot.
We love the Royals.
What is with you guys, the Royals? Why do you love this? Why do you feel you need an aristocracy in America as if there weren't one already? I mean, Jennifer Aniston isn't enough for you guys.
Why do you want an aristocracy?
Of course they are. There's us and them, and we're not part of it.
You could have said George Clooney.
She's American. I don't know. Maybe Steven that's why Spielberg. I like her.
Well, yes, Hollywood. That's why I don't watch the Academy Awards, because I don't like being reminded of like this aristocracy, you know,
and
their beautiful walled garden.
That's so upsetting. By the way, what's his name?
Kevin Hart
backed out of the Oscars, and they're like, no one wants to host it. No one wants to watch it. I'm like, what are you talking about? Everybody wants to watch it.
Well, there also, might be
Did Kevin Hart back out of the Oscars or no? The Oscars kind of push him out because
he had some homophobic tweets.
Totally. Yeah. Let's get our facts straight here. What happened?
We do try to be a factual news show.
No, actually, I don't know. I think there was pressure, but they say that he's the one that rescinded the offer.
In the end, he was like, yeah, fuck all this shit. What do I need this noise for? He's like, what did becoming president do for Donald Trump? It's like, why go out there, put yourself out in the shit? What, so he could end up being crucified by everyone who watches the Oscars?
Poor Kevin Hart.
I also love
entertainers.
I also read that, I guess, Maroon 5 is the halftime show for the Super Bowl.
How do they even exist anymore? Why is that a thing?
Oh, he's a host on The Voice, right?
Mike is anti-success.
I think that's still like hugely popular.
I think Maroon 5 is still a big deal. Anyway, you're
name
not
a single
letting
one of their songs.
The point was, they can't find
either
anybody else to perform with them, supposedly,
Joe,
because
what are you
of the
say
controversy in the NFL. Nobody wants to be associated.
What exactly is the controversy in the NFL?
Nobody seems to want to make a statement about where they, I don't know, maybe
they all want
to take a knee.
Well, take a knee. I think it's also like we want to make sure our players aren't raping or beating or, you know, they need to take stances on some bigger issues rather than whether or not.
And the players themselves are not protected with the helmets, and they don't want to change the rules fast enough to protect them and stuff.
But I guess my point is, like, what does that say about Maroon 5? They said, yes, I'll do the halftime show and no one else wants to do it.
They need gigs.
Maroon 5, that's a lot of money right there. Low.
History's not going to remember Maroon 5. This is just a cash grab. Who cares?
Name three artists that will be remembered 500 years from now. One.
Frank Sinatra.
Bob Dylan. Two.
Frank
the
Sinatra.
Beatles.
Come on.
Like, really Elvis Presley.
Yeah, you're
three.
Really going on
Chuck
there.
Berry.
Four. Chuck Norris.
Oh, was he a singer?
Five.
You did say artists. You know, you realize you said artist.
Who do you think 500 years from now, artists who will be remembered?
I mean, I don't know. I hope it's Biggie Smalls or Tupac. I grew up in this era. I'm like a white kid from Westchester who listened to too much hip hop, so hoping that.
Name a chef 500 years from now. One chef remembered
Julia Childs
from today. Best.
Boyardee.
I was going to say Julia Childs because I just watched the movie. So it makes me think that there's like further, she's got books, there's multimedia, you know.
I think it's going to be Julia, the other Julia that'll be remembered.
I think
from
that was Julie.
Oh, Julie.
No, right? Wasn't
no,
it?
Julie and Julia.
The movie is.
Yeah, it was Julie and Julia.
Yeah. Oh. Julie and Julia, right?
I don't know.
Come on.
Well,
have you not seen
500
movie?
Years from now, just Julia Childs. She will be the face of a million
if
chefs.
If the cans from Chef Boyardee make it 10,000 years from now, then yeah, he'll be remembered.
It was a real Chef Boyardee, you know. That wasn't like I think Betty Crocker was like a corporate concoction, but Chef Boyardee was like legit.
What about
Boyardee? Yes.
Will Mario Batali's of the world be forgiven? I mean, we are a forgiving society. 20 years from now, is he going to be allowed to open 5 new restaurants?
I think luckily we have really short memories and our moral compass is kind of effed, so he might have a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cosby Show is still on cable television. Like, it runs consecutively back to back. There's probably like, you could just, I forget what channel it is, but it's still there.
See, that's interesting that still runs because, like, for example, Molto Mario and all of those shows that used to run reruns, I don't think are on anymore. All of his products are pulled off of shelves.
Well, no one made money off the Molto Mario show. A lot of actors and actresses make money off the Cosby show, so maybe they keep it on to give Lisa Bonet some hard-needed cash.
I got one word for you. Marv Albert. All right, sports fans. Remember Marv Albert, who...
What did he do wrong, though?
Oh, okay. Well,
other than wear a wig. You don't know, or you just don't think it was wrong?
Well, first of all, he went to a lady, madame. That's it.
No. He attacked,
He bit a woman on the back.
Right, he bit a woman on the back, okay? And this was, like, a horrible, like, you know, sexual assault. But I think from, like, most, you know, Rangers and Knicks fans, yeah. What was even worse, he was caught wearing a dress singing show tunes.
There's nothing wrong. You do that.
Not if you're the voice of the Knicks in 1988, do you? You know, that's hard to come back from. And you know what? He's back on the radio. He's back on TV. It didn't take that long. If Marv Albert can make a comeback as the voice of professional sports after getting caught singing numbers from The King and I think, you know, let's just say it's a very Christian country who believes in second chances.
Listen, he didn't do it. He was just a dirty little boy.
Dude, he attacked a woman.
That was an S&M thing. He was wearing whips, and that's just part of that whole
world.
It
was not consensual.
I would love to see this outfit where he's wearing whips. They're like, his ensemble is like completely fabricated out of whips.
It's a King and I outfit made of leather.
A big tassel.
I remember when that story broke, when he was all over the Post, and I had to like really read because it said he was wearing a dress singing show tunes, and he really had to dig to find out exactly which tunes it was.
Mike, don't answer this. Does anyone know who the original King was in The King and I? Don't answer.
Presley.
No. Who was it? Yul Brynner, baby. Yul Brynner. Right?
Wow.
Right.
Wow. We pretty much just lost all three people who are listening to us.
Stop. All right, let's talk trends.
History hasn't treated Yul Brynner very well, nor Charles Bronson. There needs to be a Charles Bronson Renaissance.
Okay, let me ask. After Julia Child, is there one chef that'll be remembered? Who's next in line after Julia Child? I'm saying a living chef today. Mario Batali could have been it. He had that kind of energy, and he was all on TV. He was one of the first. Hey,
actually, I still think he'll be the guy.
Yeah.
Orange Crocs will live on. Probably when they find all those chicken bones, there'll be like thousands of pairs of orange Crocs.
So Mario Batali would still say him. That's interesting.
I don't know. Would it be a friend? Who would be the French
Billy
chef
from Becco?
Yeah, but you have to keep in mind who has like the broad mass appeal. I mean,
maybe
Mario
Rachel Ray
is a household name.
I hate to say it. Rachel Ray, Martha Stewart. Maybe.
More of them than any other restaurant chef.
Martha Stewart definitely has a puncher's shot at this one.
Hey, she made a comeback.
I like Martha, what, from being in jail? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. If she were not a woman, she would not have spent a second in jail. I mean, that was complete bullshit, you know, putting her in jail. That was, you know, she did something that everyone else does.
Insider trading?
She were not a woman, but yeah.
Mike has been doing it for years.
Yeah, but it was very rare for someone to actually do time for that on that level. She was a celebrity and a woman, and she you know, kind of got fucked on that deal. I feel strongly about that. If it was a dude, it would have been, you know, community service.
You're so pro Martha Stewart.
Absolutely. A lot of winking going on in that courtroom.
Yeah.
So can I ask, will Roberta's and Marta, I ask both these questions, to you guys be around in 80 years, in 100 years? Will it still be around, look the same, serving pizza?
As long as my daughter's kids aren't total shitheads, it should be.
Why? Because your daughter's already signed on?
Oh, there's no choice.
Yeah, good.
They know when they come here what the future looks like for them.
How do you remove free will from kids? I want to learn that.
Yeah. Don't send them to college.
So 80 years, that puts us in 2100?
Yeah, 2100. Will there be Marta like...
I don't know. It depends what happens with the 23 billion chickens, really. I think I'm a little concerned about that.
I know. They might take over. Well, it's interesting. I wondered, like, will Gramercy Tavern be around in 250 years?
I don't know. Will every line cook be somewhat robotic?
Will they ever go robots in the kitchen?
Potentially. I mean, we're already looking at power sources and seeing if we could figure it out. So I don't know.
All right. Let's talk top trends, rounds up. Everyone has their top 10 lists. And 2018 roundups coming out. Best restaurants, best bites, best cheap eats. Discuss.
Patrick and I were reading
very
the New
interesting
York-
topic.
No,
here.
Patrick and I were reading the New York Times yesterday. New York Magazine put some stuff out as well. I've been like following.
I could care less than what Pete Wells thinks are the top 10.
All right, but yet it became a topic of the show. It is the end of 2018, and we want to know what were your favorite. I don't know. Top three restaurants.
No one here makes enough dough to go to any of these trendy places.
We do because we get discounts.
You're the meat guy.
There is no list.
Yeah, we got. So Claro made the list.
So the top 10 from the New York Times included some of our good friends, Claro, the bar at Momofuku Co.,
Frenchette. Yeah, those were the three.
The rest we don't care about, no offense.
But also, like, I don't know, sustainability is just never a part of it. Like, I would like to see them say, you know, these restaurants put effort into buying sustainably, and so they make our top 10 list for this sustainable list. Then this is just for pure taste. This is ethnic restaurants. I mean, there wasn't enough diversity in that.
I think the whole Times issue, like this time of year, could be expanded to where it's more top 10 lists of different categories.
Yes.
And as you said, but this one from Pete Wells had to be something he reviewed this year.
Can you guys do me something really big here? Can you tell me your 10 favorite top 10 lists?
Yours is my first. No, best.
I just think it's absurd.
You don't like trends, Patrick.
Yeah, I think the top 10 list should never change. They should pretty much, if one restaurant is bumped out of the top 10, it's big news. You know,
like losing a Michelin star. That's like, you know, coming off that list.
That's the most respectable of all the things, even though they might have their limitations in how they operate. What do you care about this? Like, when you don't see Marta as one of the top 10, does that upset you? Or are you just like, fuck all those things?
No, it doesn't upset me. I think there's a million lists. You have to consider who's writing them, who they're writing them for. At the end of the day, all these lists exist to, like anything else in a publication or on a website. You're trying to get viewership. You're trying to make money, advertisers, everything else. So what are you putting these lists together for? So even when we're on a list or we're not, I'm kind of indifferent.
I mean, in the end, are people coming to your restaurant and are they enjoying themselves and are they coming back? Like, what else do you need?
That's it.
All the other stuff just goes to your ego. It's just you wanting to feel good about what you do. But in the end, all a restaurateur or chef wants is people to be sitting down, enjoying the food, having a good time, and seeing those faces return.
Do you have more business when you're in the top 10 list?
I think it goes to your point as well, which is it depends on what top 10 list that is. If it's like,
Time out.
Yeah, time out probably is actually people. It's free thing.
Every
so people
Wednesday.
Pick it up. Yeah. Time out is probably one that does show so that you can quantify, business.
I'm not going to sit here and say I don't want Marta on every list. Of course, we want Marta on lists because we want people to see and hear about us. But like, to Brandon's point, every night we're going to judge how well we're doing by the fact that we have hundreds of people coming in the restaurant. Everybody's leaving happy. How does our team feel about it? That's all that matters, because if we were on a list and that wasn't happening, then we were dead in the water anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, because oftentimes you'll see people on the list. I'll see people on these lists and I'll be like, how did they make it on this list? Have you actually been? Maybe the quality of the food is excellent, but if you go to the place, there's something about it that just like, is not exciting, or there's not people there. I see these things constantly. So really, in the end, are people coming to your restaurant and enjoying themselves?
So if you're successful, you're successful, period.
Yeah, and I think also these lists don't go back to like the restaurants that opened maybe, you know, in 2016 or 20. Like, I mean, Momofuku Co. has been around a long time, but the bar was just redone this year. It was just re-reviewed. Like, you know, it's also about relevance.
They should come back here. I redid the bathrooms.
Yes.
Yeah, very nice.
You're due for a new review.
It's a wonderful job.
It's sad. It was a sad day when I had to redo the bathroom.
There was a lot of history in there.
There was
a lot of patina of urine and
you could actually
get drugged out just by taking a piss.
But do you guys have memorable bites? All right, I'm going back to seriousness. Do you have memorable bites from this year? Like a bite of sushi, a new pizza? I don't know, a new topping.
Well, I will say, new is the funny thing that we're writing this end of year thing each year to summarize the year, and I appreciate old stalwarts, things that have been around for 50 years.
You just said before you don't want the list to change. That's like the definition of stalwart and like died in the
world. I agree.
Dude, you're a moldy fig, face it.
No, but I like things that have staying power. And sometimes I think the Martas and the Robertas of the world, places that have been around for a decade or longer, get quickly forgotten by some new shitty place that has no reputation. Oh, let's go to Greenpoint, to this place that does big heads. And I'm like, maybe.
We've had this conversation.
Go
better
to the same places.
I mean, Roberta's is fantastic. Marta is fantastic. You know, isn't it better to be warm for 20 years than hot for 2 months?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you guys are saying Roberta's is still one of my very favorite restaurants, easily on any top three.
It's in my favorite restaurant on Siegel Street.
We
Excuse
would,
me, on
we
Moore
would
Street.
Appreciate but, if you Roberta's started serving breakfast pizzas.
I don't know. I'm not sure about the breakfast pizza. I mean, isn't everything a pizza at the end of the day?
Just like at the end of the day, it's like, do you really wish this was open right now? How many people do you think would be in there?
One, two, three, yeah, exactly. Four, five.
You're counting them. It'd really just be us. You know, we opened takeout and delivery was open at 7 o'clock when we first opened it up, and it was dismal. I mean, you're talking like two or three customers before 11 o'clock,
especially.
And it's like we open at 10 still, and still from 10 to 11, it's crickets in there. So I don't know. I don't know if this neighborhood really supports breakfast, but breakfast on pizza, I could do without it. There's so many other
options.
There's so many other options.
I could have
for
a famous original
and or pizza.
I like pizza in the morning.
Can you make a pizza and then like get it cold? So I like my pizza cold.
Cold pizza for breakfast? Yes. Maybe we should just do that. Just cook pizza tonight and put it in the fridge and just lay it out all over the tables.
That's it. And then let people take it out of the refrigerator themselves and eat it in their boxer shorts standing over the sink.
So that would be
a cool experience I would pay for.
Okay, let's talk pizza. Brandon, can you make a case for your pizza or Marta's pizza? Something where you talking about each other's pizzas
or why your pizzas are the best.
Supporting each other or competing? What are we doing?
I say this all the time about pizza. One, I love pizza. So it's like very few times where I'm like, I look at a pizza and I'm just, I have something bad to say about it. I could almost say something good about almost every. Like you can
You'll
put a
find
Domino's,
the good in the
you
shitty
can put
pizza.
A Domino's pizza in front of me, and I could find the good. That's just because I like pizza. I think pizza is a superior like vessel for nourishment. Flavor. You know.
So what are you doing that's unusual? What it makes your pizza unusual? How is your pizza adding to the Pantheon or differentiating from the Pantheon? What is your signature pizza?
I don't think our intention was to add to the Pantheon. I think our intention was to just do what we thought was what we liked and what we thought was good, and just to put a product out. And I think you probably have this same philosophy, but it was like there's so much pizza that's just not made with a mindful products, right? Just like it was just a quality of products, and not that I dislike a 99-cent slice because it has its place in my heart, but I thought there was at that time a place in the world for pizza that was just made with products.
So
that
what
were,
is your pizza? Describe your pizza. Mine is a dough forward pizza, or is
so I think that. Marta's pizza is, you know, very much a Roman style pie, round, thin crusted, rolled with a doughing pin.
Yeah.
You know, so like you get like.
I want a doughing pin.
We can work that out.
Whereas they roll them with bongs.
So Marta's pizza is not dough forward because it's super flat and it's crispy, as opposed to like I think Roberta's pie, right? You've got a little bit more doughy action going on. So I think for Marta, we were trying to find an opportunity, yes, to exploit an opening in the New York pizza pantheon where that didn't exist. But at the end, like, you have to make a delicious pie. Like, it doesn't matter what you want to tell people to care about or how they want to, you know, say, you should feel good about this because it's how they do it in Rome. It's not going to matter if it doesn't taste good. But then the other challenge is just what you were saying, Brandon. Everyone loves pizza, and everyone can get down with any kind of pizza on some level. So, like, if you're in the mood for a dollar slice, that's going to hit the spot. And now all of a sudden, that's in the same arena as the kind of pizzas we're doing. And so it's really hard to, you know, kind of like you got to gas people up almost to, you know, make them love what you're doing.
I think for us, we like let's just say the margarita pizza, because this could go a million different ways. But the margarita pizza for us, it's very simple. Tomatoes are very simple. Mozzarella is very simple. And it is showcasing the dough. And I think maybe the opposite for you, like the things that are like it's less about the dough and it's more about the creaminess of the mozzarella and the brightness of the tomato. Mm-hmm. And the dough is more of a vessel to showcase.
It's a vehicle.
Vehicle to showcase the other things. And probably just philosophically, we're a little bit less. Like, we're probably more, right, dough forward, where we're like, the dough is the thing. And these things are just complementing bread, because we're also bread lovers.
Bread and meat, my two favorite food groups.
What's your favorite topping, Joe?
Anchovies.
Yes.
I love anchovies and like tangy buffalo milk cheeses.
I don't trust people who don't like anchovies, frankly. Mm-mm. You know, it's like that. I don't like people who don't like Elvis, and I don't like people who don't, I don't trust people who don't like anchovies.
And I don't trust people who wouldn't have a cat mitzvah for their lovely 13-year-old cat.
It's awesome. But I want to say, pizza, like the margarita, especially, you know, it's like the blues. It's got three ingredients. It's simple. And yet 99% of the people still manage to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Wrong is a tough word, but yes, I get what you're saying.
Brandon
was saying
the opposite,
but I think it goes to the point, right? He's saying it's basic. It's three things.
I don't think
anyone gets it wrong because those three things you could put together in the worst, like immeasurable, like you could have like 5,000 pounds of mozzarella and two drops of tomato
sauce. I can't put a salad
and,
on top of it. If you put a farmer's market on top of a pizza, the dough isn't strong enough to withhold it. It has to stay in it as a slice. Like if you cut it into a triangle, it can't be so topping heavy. That's why the works
I agree with that. Actually, I'm a fan of the continuity of the slice when you pull it out. And we do. We have some here that I feel like maybe like one or two toppings too many, and it's like a little like starts
or
to
you
fall.
Let,
but
you
I agree.
Let people design their own. I think they make it too heavy.
By the way, that is one amazing thing I see. When you go to any pizza place and there are 10 pizzas recommended that are, like for you, the Beastmaster, or for you, the Siciliana or whatever, almost no one that I'm ever with goes to the toppings and creates their own. Almost
That's
everybody
dangerous
picks
territory
from the
right
10.
There.
It almost, I would say probably 75% of the time ends up bad. And most of the time here, when people do it, it usually gets edited by the kitchen or
Why?
By the server.
Why? People say
because
I want
they
onion
don't,
and
fine.
Sausage.
It's fine. And they know what they want. But the problem is, it starts to like break down the continuity of the pizza itself. When you put too much stuff on there, it's not necessarily that those flavors, you may like those flavors together. And let's... flavor aside, you're like the actual pizza and the way that it cooks in the oven, all that weight pushing down on the hearth slab and all that heat against the bottom of the dough, and then it's just wet and like
wet is the biggest issue.
Yes.
Because what ends up happening, right, like making pizza, it's about a harmony, it's about a balance, so it takes a lot of trial and error to figure out like how much of the cheese, how much sauce, so you get that perfection. Everyone starts coming in and messing with that harmony because they're like, but I want mushrooms. Mushrooms create moisture. So now it throws the whole balance off. And you can't.
Almost everything you put on it creates some sort of moisture, either in like a fat, like greasy moisture or a water, like vegetables have water moisture, like meat has fat moisture.
See, it's like the blues, it's like jazz. It's not the notes you play. Usually it's the notes that you don't.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Brilliant. Brilliant, Mike.
You can't say you want a harmonica
that's
and
the
then
best
think it's going to sound
I heard
great.
About pizza.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a little self-restraint. I mean, that's what,
Yeah.
I mean, pizza, I mean, there's a maximalist pizza, I guess. Like, maybe the Millennium Falco, one or two, or the pizza with the works that weighs a ton and it's, like, wet and gross. But I think minimalism, is called for in pizza. Thelonious Monk, Coco Chanel, Ringo Starr. I mean, they understand, Coco Chanel, what does she always say? Before you leave the house, take one thing off.
I like that. That's what we say about when we're trying to make dishes.
Any dish. And I think the best chefs are also the best editors, right? So mm-hmm. they're usually the quality that's so good about them is they can look at something and say, this needs to go away. And This needs one more thing. It's like you just need to take like two of those things off of there.
One more thing is often the crutch.
I feel that way about the show.
Nice. And it's usually
Survivor,
one of us.
Who's off?
It's either Mike or like almost every single time there shouldn't be both of us.
So okay, we're about to go to break. We will edit the last question about does your diets change. I'm going to not during the winter. I only eat waterfowl for breakfast, lunch, and dinner in November and December.
Why a duck?
Duck and goose.
Why a duck?
So that's all I eat, which is hard for breakfast because a lot of the delis don't have like goose sandwiches.
They don't
yet.
Have duck bacon.
How's the duck no. over at Brooklyn Natural?
At the Natch.
Duck prosciutto though. That's like
that's
you could
good.
Go duck prosciutto like over the top of your bagel and cream cheese.
It's the only meat you want wet, water, fowl. So we're gonna take a break and we're gonna come back with
Patrick. What happened to your voice?
Show from Marta. What? I'm trying to sound more like you, Mike.
More like Marlon Brando.
I thought you liked me.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we're back. Thank you, Noam, for the filler music because we were still chatting in here.
Noam? That was a really short break, wasn't it?
It was very short because you kept your little, you were the sponsor. And
yeah, the ad was shorter than usual. But a punchy ad, a good ad.
My sponsor, they're very quick. I'm like, get some food, bye!
Well, you did talk really loud and really aggressive. You were kind of channeling, like, I don't know. You wanted it to be more of like a hip-hop kind of ad.
Sam Kinison had a pizza place.
Yeah, I was really actually, and Mike will love this, I was really tapping into my inner WWF, pre-WWE.
Randy Macho Man Savage.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Got it.
Step into his
Maybe we should play it one more time. That's always good.
Can we get another ad with a Nature Boy woo?
That's always my favorite. That's always been my favorite bumper in the history of this station. Is the Roberta's, plug right there. I love it.
Yeah,
in like 20 minutes about like food radio and why I should own a tote bag.
And then it's like this guy rolls in, just going straight Mean Gene.
Well, in case you forgot who we are, this is the Main Course OG airing on Heritage Radio Network. We're live from Roberta's here in Bushwick, and we have in studio with us today, obviously Mike, Brandon, Patrick, and me, Emily, but our special guest is Joe Tarasco from Union Square Hospitality, and you are the former executive chef of Marta.
Former,
and now you are running operations.
I'm wearing a button down every day. Except
you look good. Sweater.
What a button down. What? This is radio, so you need to explain it to the listeners what exactly you're wearing right now.
Typically, we wear some sort of a cloth on our torso, and mine buttons. That's how I.
You're more important. So
instead of Chef White's,
what's it like opening two bars? Because you just opened two bars in the back of Marta, basically. Is it very different from the full-service sit-down dining format at Marta? And which do you prefer? And yeah, what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying I've been USHG 13 years. That's a long time. So, like, I never expected anywhere 13 years in one shot. And it was all through full-service restaurants, and it's been wonderful so far. But the opportunity to open these bars was, I think, a fun way to take everything I've learned and done in a full service capacity and then apply it to a different model, different concept. How can we create food that fits the concept? How can we create a service model that fits the concept? And it was a fun exercise, and I think we did a great job with it. And it's still an ongoing process because they're about a year old. So they're still being molded. And I don't know if I would say I prefer one over the other. This is still new to me. So, we're still trying to figure out, how to ride waves of success, but also get over some of the challenges and the struggles. Definitely made some mistakes, definitely had some wins in the beginning, so we're still manipulating. Whereas Marta's 4 years old at this point, and, to a certain extent, there's only so much we can change. Not that we want to change anything, but it's like really settling into its own. Whereas Vini e Fritti and Cafe Marchio still have some room to move, so...
So what is it? That kind of bar concept is somewhat new, right? I mean, I grew up going to Sant Ambrose, but it was similar in that you can stand and pick from little things that you can see and get a quick cup of coffee. But I mean, do things get old? Do you have trouble cycling stuff out, picking the menu, or were you just copying what you saw in Rome?
Well, with Cafe Marchio, we kind of... Rome was the main inspiration, so we really tried to, like, pastry chef Jessica Weiss and I went to Rome, and we really, kind of like ate everything we could possibly eat, whether that you'd eat in the morning. So all the pastries, cookies, biscotti, things like that. And when we brought all those ideas over and we started serving it at Cafe Marchio, we realized that there are no Romans in New York, and so there was kind of a challenge there. So now we've Americanized some of our pastries. So donuts replaced some of the more Roman items, and we see success with that. Whereas at Vini e Fritti, there really wasn't an exact model that we were trying to replicate. So then it just became like, well, you know, fried fruit is close to Roman heart and culinary landscape. So we're going to just do awesome fried food. Some of it's inspired by Rome, some of it loosely, but it just became a matter of let's just do stuff that's really delicious and goes really well with champagne and wine.
Are there a lot of Americans in New York?
You know, it turns out that it's the majority of New Yorkers are American. Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. You delegated your entire founding restaurant, the first restaurant that you really started, right?
Well, I was a member of a team that opened that restaurant.
So you were the head guy, though. And then you just leave it to Lena. Is it hard to delegate? I mean, people have told me delegation's an art form.
I don't, like, one, I haven't really left it because I'm still there, but definitely Lena, who has done such an amazing job, has all of the culinary responsibility, but I completely trust her, and we've worked together for a long time, so I know that she's going to create in line with what's best for the concept, and that's all I care about. So,
but what if you disagree with her?
But the key word there, Patrick, is trust, and I think that's where the two of you guys differentiate.
No, but I mean, you don't see her doing something that you disagree with, but you just let it happen.
Well, I mean, we're not the same person, so she's definitely going to create some things or make a decision that I may or may not have done differently. But that's fine. That's part of the gig. And if there's something that I'm looking at and I'm like, wow, this is way out of left field and it makes no sense for the concept and I don't get it, we'll have a discussion about it. But I'm not going to micromanage everything she makes and seasons. And it's her role. It's her job to make the food delicious. And, you know, it's her name on the cuisine in there, too. So I have to give her the right to make the calls.
That Go pizza was so fucking good.
But that's the same on any team. You start by hiring talented people. And then you got to let the talent do their jobs. If you wanted a bunch of automatons just cloning what you did, you know, you wouldn't really have much of a talent search problem, would you? You know?
You would have very little growth too. You would hit your ceiling, which would then be the ceiling of the whole group, right? So that's sometimes the group allows you to have these like peaks, which also sometimes come with valleys, but the growth can kind of be multiple dimensional.
See, I don't really have an ego for this, so I get more joy out of watching my team, my colleagues do a great job and get notoriety and kick ass. That means more to me than someone saying, Joe, you did an amazing job with this. You're amazing. I don't care about that.
See, I always rather score than make an assist and help someone.
Joe, you're amazing.
Yeah.
But do you think that's something, have you learned that from Danny? Like, is that also Danny Meyer's philosophy that he also wants to empower
Danny always people? Wants for number one. He always wants, no, just kidding.
I mean, look, we call it what, servant leadership and like kind of selfless leadership. In the end, you can't have a large operation and try to serve hundreds of people and set the illusion that you're
hundreds
the only
of
one
thousands
doing
thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands of people in a year. You know, so like no, I think but that's a key component to leadership. I don't think there's anybody sitting here who doesn't have that level of selflessness, and that's what's allowed them to get to where they are by allowing other people to take some credit and do
maybe,
a great job.
Maybe Mike.
Maybe
I'm starting an anarchist pizza operation to compete with you guys.
Emily, I delegated you doing the intro, and it was terrible. I have to do it from now on. Just
you
kidding.
See, we win as a team, but you lose alone.
Can you tell us a poignant Danny Meyer story? Something that you really learned from him, something that we might not know reading these Eater articles or going to his restaurants, or something that you taught him or he taught you, or just a little insight into inner Danny Meyer.
Well, I'll let him tell you if I actually taught him anything, but I think I don't have like one story, but over the years of working with Danny and doing tastings for restaurants and the openings and his kind of feedback and critique about things along the way, he has an exceptional ability to distill not only his thoughts, but I think better yet, he has an amazing ability to pinpoint exactly what we need the guest to feel, exactly what needs to be focused on as a final product. How do we want people to feel when they're eating and drinking and being served here? And using that as the North Star, you know, that attracts all of our decisions. Everything has to flow from that concept. He has a great ability to really articulate that. And it's a helpful thing when you're creating something out of thin air to have an idea. Otherwise, it just becomes random, right? Just everybody's trying to throw spaghetti against
that's the
wall.
The loss.
Didn't you take everybody to Gramercy Tavern once? A lot of your upper management. Didn't you take them to a big dinner at Gramercy Tavern once?
I can't remember what I ate for breakfast this morning, Patrick.
You did.
You asked me these questions. But you know, that's the lost art of the restaurateur. And I think this is a bit, we've talked about this before on this show. Like, there's not a lot of kids that are out there that are like, I want to be a restaurateur. Most of them take this thing, this path where they want to be the chef, and that's fine. But that is really the essential quality of the restaurateur, is pinpoint, like, laser focus on what the experience is. Like, how do all of these elements come into one, and what does the guest feel like when they're here, and how do they feel once they've left?
And that's a really important thing for chefs, too, because most chefs have never spent time in the dining room. So you're basically cooking food for the sake of cooking food and your passion for it. But you're not necessarily doing it for a guest. I think it takes someone to take you out of the kitchen and say, what you're doing in the kitchen is going to impact an experience, a birthday, an anniversary, a guy on a date that doesn't want to have, like, salami, you know, draped across his face. So don't cut the salami so, you know, thick. Like, you need to think about these things when you're
But that's crazy that a chef wouldn't spend time in a restaurant or go around experiencing these things. Like, you know, I've heard people say, to be a writer, well, you should just write, you should practice. No, to be a writer, you need to read. You need to see what the final product looks like on the page. And then if your product starts, you know, coming close to the things that you like without exactly emulating it, then you know at least you're playing in the same league. You can't be cooking in the kitchen and not be eating at the dining table. It doesn't make any sense.
I get so sad when I see a family going to a restaurant and you know they're spending a lot of money. It's a big moment for them. They don't always go out and they are not having a good time. You either hear it and you're not at a great restaurant,
it's
and your
sad.
Heart sinks.
It is sad.
It's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is.
For people who don't do it all the time. And I almost wished I could tell them how
to be honest
yell
with
at
you,
the, not
to
yell
be honest
at the waiter.
With you, that feeling, Patrick, is why it is almost impossible for me to go out and eat. I sit in a restaurant and I watch the whole time, and I just see every little thing, and a lot of times I'm depressed by what I'm seeing.
Okay, that's so how you go to juniors.
Often
it's hard for me.
Juniors.
I actually really do love juniors. the quality of the food is not excellent, but people are always happy inside there. It is weird. It's a weird, like, it's so crazy because you spend so much money on really mediocre food.
But they give you a free bread basket.
But for some reason, yeah, I know. It's also, like, really funny to watch the people that are like, can I have some more pickle? And then they're like, can I take the pickles to go? It's like, you only ordered one thing and then you got pickles and bread. You took all that stuff to go.
It's not just bread, it's muffins.
Sounds like smart shopping.
Maybe we need an outing to Juniors. I've never been.
Juniors is the best. Have you ever been there while you were sober, though? Have you ever been there and, like, not completely wasted? Like, why would you bother?
Yes, he goes in the morning with his three kids.
I, like, live
kids.
Across the street from it, so it's like, and my kids are constantly like, I want cookies from Juniors.
I've seen Brandon there, like, three times, three separate times.
Wow. Which implies that you've been there a lot.
I love Juniors.
But it's funny because Juniors wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have chose that. There's definitely a lot of restaurants out there that you sit down at. Hey, Danny does a great job. Most of his restaurants are tremendously run and feel really good inside. I think, Keith McNally does a good, I think there's people out there who just intuitively understand what people want from dining. And when you go to those restaurants, you just feel it. They're just machines. They work really nice. It's like driving a BMW. It just works.
You mean a Mercedes?
He doesn't even.
I meant a BMW.
Don't you drive an Audi?
I do, and I hate it.
Why?
Yeah. But also
because I used to drive a BMW.
Well, you had to turn it in for a family vehicle.
And also, listen, I think this though speaks to the people who come to the restaurant as well. That you need a restaurant's thing you kind of have to learn how to use as well. You need to learn how to read a menu and to get the best of the experience. And, you know, something a lot of people come to a restaurant, they just want to order the same thing over and over. And a lot of people come in and they don't realize that the customer is not always right. And if it's a good restaurant, you should put control in the power of the chef and the power of the people serving you to make suggestions.
I like red tablecloth. Forget whatever you want. Like a coffee shop. Do you ever need to look at a menu at a coffee shop?
Who look
you can
at the
get whatever you
shops.
Want. It's like red tablecloth.
Joe, what do you get when you go
How's
to a coffee shop?
Bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll.
If I go to a coffee shop, I'm getting an espresso, and I'm probably not eating because I've already had
No, we're talking
like a diner. Like a diner.
A diner?
I like it. He's so fucking Roman. He's like, I have an espresso.
No, if you if go I, to a diner.
If like, I go to a diner, I'm getting a burger. I'm okay. getting something you should get at a diner. Yes. I'm not ordering lobster and like the filet of sole.
Right.
Last week, someone said grilled cheese. I said a turkey club.
Grilled cheese, tomato, and bacon.
It's funny because I oftentimes get the tuna.
Oh, chicken fingers,
tuna,
you said.
The tuna melt. And the chicken fingers are always go-to because it's like you're never going to, it's like you know what you're getting when you order it.
Do you know what my advice? If you go to a restaurant where you don't know the people and you want to get treated nice, order sparkling water. It's the best $5 investment you'll make. All of a sudden, you're a different table than everybody.
Because you're a baller at that
big
point.
Big spender.
So, Joe, what's next? New projects? Anything you're allowed to share?
Well, next short term, he's coming to our office for a free pork
chop
box.
A small or a big package. We still haven't figured that out yet, but there's pork in my future. No, I mean, like right now, there's some fun stuff going on at the hotel. We're going to be changing some things up on the Redberry side of things. So stuff that it's going to impact our lobby bar experience. And we're still kind of figuring things out there. And we have some, again, like Lena and the team are doing a great job. So kind of like tightening that. And then
do you get along with the hotel?
We have a great relationship, yeah.
You have to do room service, too, for what, 100 rooms?
About 250, but most people, it's interesting. The hotel right now, we have a lot of people order takeout pizza on Seamless. So that's kind of a weird like conflict at the door when like the Seamless guy comes in with Domino's and
just
and
to go up the just elevator. To go up,
yeah.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say they order Seamless from you guys to be delivered upstairs.
No, they're in the room. They just go on their app and they order to go food because you know that's an odd thing.
Yes, that's
now.
What he's saying.
It's crushing.
Domino's,
it is
not
really,
Marta.
This is the future of the hotel.
No. Wait, they order
experience.
They order your pizza to be delivered.
No, all right. So they're in a room and they don't want Marta pizza or they don't even think about it. They just order, they go on Seamless and think, what do I want to eat the way that any of us would in our apartments and just say,
don't
what
let
I want to
them
eat
in. Don't let
Can't
them
you
in.
Pay Seamless to like be at the top, like based on distance?
I have I a feeling it's more of a price thing as well. Domino's and Marta Pizza.
Room service is expensive. And by the way, it's like same thing. Hotels used to make a phenomenal amount of money on phone calls. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not happening anymore. They made a phenomenal amount of money on pay-per-view movies. That's not happening anymore. I mean, there have been lawsuits where hotels were running signal blocking technology, signal jamming technology, so people couldn't use their cell phones, would have to use the house phones. A long distance phone call from a hotel room costs a lot of fucking money.
By the way,
but you don't need it when everybody's got an iPhone in their pocket.
I was interviewed here by Frances McDormand. She interviewed me about Alice Waters, and she was having so much fun here at
night.
The
funny thing is, she'd never looked at you once the whole time. She was like constantly looking in the opposite direction.
But she did say that she wants a hotel here at Roberta's. Just a place where you have dinner. It's like you spend $35, you wake up in the morning, you have breakfast at Roberta's, and then you leave.
To what Mike said, though, this is actually why hotel prices have skyrocketed. Because hotels used to make so much money on the ancillary amenities, the wet bar, the phone calls, the pay-per-view. They don't make any of that money, and now they're losing their last grasp, which was room service, to Seamless. This is really happening. All those things are happening.
I want to make an offer for the air rights at Roberta's.
All right.
I want to build a hotel on the roof of Roberta's. I want to talk to you about it. And room service will be coming down in your boxer shorts to eat cold pizza out of your refrigerator.
I'm in.
I think Roberta's could get away with it.
It can't
I really think you could do that. It'd be revolutionary. You guys are the ones to forge that path.
Just you could sleep on the roof. There's no cover over your head. We'll just give you a tent. You could just
glamping.
Bushwick nights.
glamping them. Cold glamping.
I'm pulling the plug on this idea. We have to resume it next week. Brainstorm for the hotel.
I'm on the ground floor, if you
will. All right, Joe, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for
this
having.
Is the Main Course OG. Stick around for Tech Bites up next at 11.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.